You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 37 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and today I am joined by Gold Leader, Ron Longy.
Hey everybody, I'm back.
And our Targeting Coordinator, Andrea Longy.
Hey guys.
No Marcel today. He's off having his priorities mixed up. And as we probably stated before, Alex is busy with a new baby. And he's holding down the fort with the Facebook and making sure as soon as FFG actually releases an X-Wing article, we will have all the information up there immediately. So when we originally recorded this episode, the gunboat preview had not dropped yet. So I'm going to be moving some things around from what we originally had. We're going to first be putting in the audio from our town hall meeting that we had regarding the gunboat preview and all of the awesome stuff that got spoiled in that article. It'll then be followed by a really interesting post we saw on the FFG forums asking us as a Gold Squadron podcast a bunch of questions. So that will be your show today. Enjoy. It's been a little bit over a month. We hadn't heard from FFG. People were just like, man, really, we need something. Give us something, FFG. And boom, we got the gunboat preview. So we're going to go through everything that's here while we just wait for people to call in. You have two ways to call in. You can hit me up through Skype. That is goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can also just call us with your regular phone. And the phone number is 802-465-3770. So feel free to hit us up at any time and we will talk about the gunboat preview or anything else that you want to talk about. So this should be a good time. Oh, there's our first call. Phil Mead. Philip.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. This is Phil Mead of the Shuttle Tidarium podcast, if you recognize those silky cords.
Yeah, so I'm really pumped about this gunboat coming out. It looks great in person. I saw it at Gen Con, and it's pretty cool. This latest preview, they really spill all the beans. I don't think there's anything in this pack that's not revealed.
Yeah, right? We know everything. We're just waiting for it to come out. Now get off the boat, give me my gunboat,
right,
and let's put it on the table.
Yeah. I think that...
Oh, Philip. Hold on 1 second. Technical difficulties. Philip, I can't hear you, Philip. I don't know what happened. Jeez. Hey, Philip. Oh, wait a second. Things are breaking. Philip, give me a call back. Let's see if I can get a hold of him again. Philip, are you there?
Hey, yeah, I don't know why. Did I cut out?
Yeah, something happened. Give me a check 1-2 okay. Real quick.
Check 1-2.
All right.
How am I now?
Okay. You sound good now. Let's keep you there
okay,
now.
Okay, cool.
So you were saying they spilled the beans.
Right, yeah, they spilled the beans, everything. And I was wondering, I think there's basically two things that are pretty interesting to me about this. And one is possibly using cheap gunboats with the jamming bean, and another, like, disruptor type cannon, like say tractor beam, or I guess flechette, a little flechette, and All right.
Most people should feel the same way about the Fleshette canon. Continue.
Yeah. But using that as sort of a flanking disruptor ship that you can sort of zoom in on this the side of an enemy formation, make them either choose to turn and engage or sort of ignore, because it's pretty, you know, weak on its own. You probably don't want to spend all your time attacking it.
Right.
But a jamming beam could be well worth its salt against an ace-style ship or, you know, something that's really relying on tokens. And likewise, tractor beams could be pretty disruptive. I'm kind of surprised that we haven't seen any tractor beams recently, just because a lot of the top meta ships, in my, you know, as far as I can tell, casual guy,
right,
are pretty low agility. I mean, they're not too hard to hit with something and then throw onto an asteroid or throw out of formation.
Yeah, like, here's the thing with tractor beam. Like, so the low agility ship you see running around, at least in competitive play right now, is Nim, right? Mm-hmm. He's all over the place.
Right.
The issue is that he's PS10, and if a good name Nim player would be like, I'm just not going to let you shoot me. So then you can take the next step. All right, well, then I'm going to take multiple tractor beams, and I'm going to put them in different parts of the board.
Yeah, but then you're, like, wasting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And tractor beams don't do damage. It's just like, it's tough.
Yeah. That's the thing about tractor beams is that you really have to follow it up with something, you know. So, yeah, they're really tricky to use. But, you know, on the other hand, they're cheap.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it starts at, what, 18 points base?
Right. So then it's one for the title.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have, you know, you could put 21 points on this and have a tractor beam and a jamming beam. Is jamming beam 1 point?
Jamming beam, I have it all right here. Jamming beam is 1 point, yes.
Yeah. So that might be useful as a sort of toolkit to sort of try to deal with different things. The other thing that's kind of interesting to me is combining unguided rockets with saturation salvo.
Okay, so saturation salvo, let me pull that one up here. So it says it's an EPT 1 point, and it says after you perform an attack with a torpedo or missile secondary weapon that does not hit, so you whiff the attack, okay, each ship at range one of the defender with an agility value lower than the squad point cost of that torpedo or missile.
Mm. Yeah, I guess that's a real kicker for this, because unguided rockets is pretty cheap.
Yeah,
that's probably why it didn't really work that great.
Yeah.
That sucks.
I'm sorry. Did I just pour water on your, like?
I hadn't realized that quite yet. But the saturation salvo is kind of curious though, right? I mean, it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The effect is interesting, but it only triggers if you miss. That's another thing about it.
Yeah, like
it's weird.
If you're there's a catch 22 in there, right? If you're investing, so like my mind immediately goes, well, then I should have the high, like the expensive missiles in order so that if this procs, it affects the most amount of ships. But if I'm paying 4-5 points for a missile, I want that thing to hit, and I want it to hit hard.
Yeah.
So. I think this is going to be a fun, just kind of like messing around card, but I don't know if we're going to see this in competitive play right away.
Yeah. 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 Missing and simultaneously requiring the high cost. Ironically, it sort of works well with another, you know, back of the binder card. You remember munitions failsafe?
Yeah. I missed my missile. I get to do it again.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, it's, you're paying some points for this. It's going to be like, you know, say you have a 4-point missile or torpedo that you're going to be shooting.
Mm-hmm.
and then two more points for munitions failsafe plus saturation salvo. So it's a 6-point combo.
Yeah, exactly.
A splash damage effect that you have to roll for.
So then why not just take
assault missiles?
Right, assault missile or just harpoon missiles, right?
Like, yeah, or harpoon missiles. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm glad that it's 1 point so that people will try it because it is 1 point, but I don't think it's a 1 point well spent, personally.
Yeah, and the 1 point EPT space is really, very competitive, right? There's a lot of good 1 point EPTs. There's like a million good ones.
Yeah. I mean, why not take VI? Why not take Crackshot? Like, if it's not better than Crackshot or VI, it needs to be 0 points for me to even look at it.
Right. Other than that, I think the only other insight that I have on this, and this sort of stems from the custom card league that I've been running for a while on FFG forums.
Yeah, that's actually a good transition, right? Because you're like, all right, so this is what they actually did compared to what... Because, I mean, this one showed up right away when you guys were doing this.
It was the ability to fire missiles after a slam, I think, may have been an idea that I don't know if I was the first one to come up with this idea, but I came up with this idea in a design for a ship for a Scimitar assault bomber. It's a pretty obscure EU ship, but essentially it's a fast bomber. So I, had the idea to put slam on it and then give it a way to fire missiles after slamming. And it's an interesting thing that mainly works well, I think, on high pilot skill ships. So, because then you can use the slam to reactively maneuver and then line up a missile shot. It's pretty straightforward, right?
Yep, exactly.
Of course, here with obviously the main candidate is Major Vinder, but the conundrum is, what do you give as the EPT? I guess she would work pretty well if you give her advanced slam. And VI, and then the missile upgrades, missile title, missile upgrade. But it does get expensive. That's going to put her in the region of 34 points, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it can get pretty costly there. The question is, are you going to be able to get the value out of Major Vinder?
Right.
At that.
Right. So, you can probably do some pretty interesting flanking type maneuvers. I mean... Say you're coming up on the side of a formation that's skirting asteroids or something. If they keep going straight, you can decide to come in with a three turn. Or if they turn towards you, you could either turn away or try to fly past them and then come in later on a turn. It's pretty interesting, but I think it's fairly limited in its application, just because you're still usually going to need that target lock setup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Unless you stick dead eye on, which is possible.
Mm-hmm. But then, or you go with if you have the missile title, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, you can take long range scanners. That's another option.
Right. Yeah, long range scanners is interesting. It's something that I've thought about for a while with other ships. I think there's good reasons that you don't see it usually.
Yeah.
Just because you telegraph what your intentions, unless you're being very sneaky. There's two ways you can do it. You can use it to set up your shot, or you can use it to try to fake out your opponent and make them fly away from you, and then. Disrupt their formation. I think there's a really good element, psychological element to that long range sensors that hasn't really ever been used, just because it's almost always better to have guidance chip.
Yeah, I mean, the free modification is just great. It's just awesome.
Yeah, it's just so powerful.
All right, Phil. Well, thank you so much for being our first caller.
Sure.
All right. Have a good night, man.
See ya.
He was ready and waiting. How's it going, Paul?
Dune, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I hear you good. You hear me okay?
Yeah, dude. It's going well. Good to talk to you again.
Always. Thank you for calling in, man. So, Gumbo Hype!
Ah, oh, dude. Super excited to just see this in action. It's awesome. Yeah, I had some general thoughts, and I just wanted to kind of talk about a few of the upgrades.
Go for it. You have the floor.
So I guess first thoughts in general, as excited as I am to see this on the table, I don't see it as crazy meta breaking. I mean, I've been wrong before, but I see it more as just a straight up better bomber when it comes to ordnance. It doesn't have the ability to carry crew, obviously, but I mean, you look at the PS2 gunboat, and it's 2 points more than the baseline bomber. And then the PS4 gunboat has an EPT slot, which the bomber does not. So I think you're going to see this as kind of a filler ship. I've been playing around with a couple of Imperial squads where I'm flying two bombers, kind of a flanker, and then an ace. And that's where I'm excited to use this, is kind of that PS2 range specifically. You don't need to run extra munitions on it because you can reload everything.
Boom, reload, baby. Just do it again.
Exactly. So, and with the baseline bomber, you were running extra munitions anyway. So really, if you look at the baseline point cost, it was the same as a PS2 bomber anyway.
Absolutely.
This thing has shields. This thing has, I guess, more HP in general. And the ability to slam is... and still fire when including that title is ridiculous. And is that title unique? I don't think it is. Is it?
Nope. Neither of the titles are unique.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm gonna read them down real quick for the people at home. So right now, Paul is referencing the OS-1 Arsenal loadout. And it's a Alpha Class Star Wing only title. It says your upgrade bar gains the torpedo and missile upgrade icons. You may perform attacks with torpedoes and missile secondary weapons against ships that you have locked, even while you have a weapons disabled token.
Yeah. And so I... In looking at both of those titles, I don't know, maybe we see the XG1, the gun one being used. But I think you'll see the OS1 as kind of the standard staple to this ship, especially with that reload action. Because if you're taking the XG1 title, then you're kind of, in a way, wasting that ordnance. Because you don't want to load it up too much, right? Like you don't want to put on a cannon and then a bunch of other munitions on it, at least at first pass, because then it becomes too high value of a target to go after.
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, you're like, oh, I'm gonna flank you with this ship. You're like, oh no, I'm just gonna turn and kill it and then deal with the rest of your list.
And especially if it has over a third of your point costs, which it gets expensive really quick, especially if you're talking about the two unique pilots.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So I don't know. I see it more as a support ship, being small base without the half points. And we've talked about this before. FFG, just make all ships half points, we're seeing the HP creep, for sure. But anyway, that's a side conversation. Last thing, I guess, now that they've spoiled the, saturation salvo, I think that's what it's called.
Yep.
EPT. I see it as directly trying to affect Biggs because how many times have we shot at Biggs in general, or at least I have, not hit him, even with your munitions, when you're especially now combining Lorik, where you're giving just ridiculous mods to him to not be hit.
Yep.
And this is saying, all right, even if you don't get hit, man, you're going to have to roll damage and everyone else in your little tight formation too. It's a little late to the party, though, because we have harpoons coming as well.
Exactly. Next week.
Exactly. And I just, you were just talking to the previous caller, that you look at other one-point EPTs and say, okay, how is this more valuable than something else? And I look at Deadeye specifically, especially on low PS pilots. I don't know why you'd ever take this over Deadeye on a low PS pilot.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And especially then with one of the unique, I can't remember which unique pilot it is, but that you can still fire if you have a target lock on somebody. Maybe I'm thinking of the title.
That's the title. That says, title. You can fire after slamming if you have the title.
Right. So even then, why in the world wouldn't you take Deadeye? Because then you can treat that target lock text as focus. So all you need to do is focus after advanced slamming, and then you can still fire.
That's it. You know, let me look at the word of this. So that, I think that's something that might have to be FAQ'd, because I can argue it both ways. I feel like, well, it does specifically have the words like, it's not like you have to have the lock for the torpedo. It just says like, if you have a target lock on that guy, you can, you can use this effect. I don't know if Deadeye will let you move that, because Deadeye, I think, just says treat attack target lock as attack focus.
Right? That's true.
So
yeah, it's not treat.
We almost broke it, Paul. We almost did it.
So close. That's all right.
The one thing that this title does do is it does give an argument for long range scanners. Because if you have somebody locked and you do, you know, you come in fast and slam, you know, come around a corner, come around an asteroid, and you have them target lock from the first turn, you know, you have that taken care of.
Yeah, and I really like long range scanner, to be honest. That's another thing I've been playing around with the PS2 bombers. And again, you were talking about this with the previous caller. I totally psych out opponents. Like, I'll lock onto a target I'm not actually planning on targeting first, so that they will fly away knowing that I'm going to come in and grab a target lock on somebody else, and knowing where they're hopefully going to be, especially now with munitions that you don't have to spend the lock.
Yeah.
So you still get that reroll. Anyway, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know how much this is going to shake up, but I see it as a really good support ship role. And I guess last thing I want to talk about was the jam beam.
Yeah. Let me pull that up right here. Go for it.
So I had to look up what jamming actually does. So if you're jamming a token to get rid of that jam condition, if I'm understanding that correctly, great. You're potentially stopping somebody else from firing munition if they have a target lock or focus. But the range 1-2 restriction just makes this really hard to take over tractor beam, especially on like a tie D.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's cool, I guess, but I don't, again, it's one of those things, like, I don't know how meta defining it's going to be.
I think it's probably one of those cards where it might cycle in and out when it's needed, when, you know, so for instance, if we were still in a really strong Atani meta, we'd see jamming beam everywhere, right? You're just ripping focus and evade tokens off people. But we're not there right now. So
yeah.
You know, when token stacking comes back, whenever that might be, this will definitely be a good weapon. They had to make it 1 point, though, because if it was 2 points,
for sure.
Never mind. Never gonna look at it.
Yep.
Not gonna think twice.
Yep. I totally agree. I don't see it being used outside of a tie defender, tie D title, just because you're wasting an attack then if you're using this, and especially with such a high hit point meta right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, maybe, but I don't see it used outside of a tie D where you're getting that second attack. But I don't know, man. Those are my initial thoughts. I'm excited to hit it to the table either way. I'll probably end up buying two of them.
Yeah.
Just because I like the two ship support idea.
Yeah. But absolutely.
Anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Paul.
Yeah. Dion, keep doing the great work you do, man. You're awesome.
Thank you, dude.
Alrighty, bye-bye.
In the article itself, they took some time and compared the gunboat to the K-Wing, because they both have slam. And the biggest difference you see here is the fact that the gunboat has a 3 hard, okay? So it's going to do a better job of getting around asteroids. It's going to be able to have some more space to move. It does still have pretty limited greens. they take the instead of having green one banks, I believe that the K-Wing has, it has green two banks, so it has to go a little bit faster to clear stress. Also, another thought here is with the slam and the three hard, you can your K turn off of a slam, so you're, you know, you do a hard turn again, is a lot wider. So that can change your trajectory a lot, give you different options as opposed to the K-Wing that just has too hard. Now, one thing, as I was chatting back and forth with my, you know, my different X-Wing friends, and we wondered if this dial is good enough for this ship. And this is the reason why. The K-Wing has a very limited dial, but it has a turret. Right, you can shoot 360 degrees, and do. Sorry about that. That's actually my mother calling me. should I pick it up? That'd probably be awkward to do on a show. I won't do that right now. I'm gonna shoot her a text. Actually, hold on. Devin, can you call my mom and tell her I'm doing a show and using my phone for the show? Alrighty. If she wants to talk X-Wing, she appreciates that I like X-Wing, but she doesn't know anything about X-Wing. Actually, I guess I'll just tell the story, right? My parents are interesting. I've tried to teach them, I've taught them different board games before. But I can never, it is a bad idea to teach them together anything that's competitive because, they will fight. So I got three separate instances. One was Risk, one was Monopoly, and one was X-Wing, where it really was my dad's best option was to take out my mom. Like, he was in that position. So he wants to win the game. He goes and tries for it. And there's the, what the heck, man? Why do you keep attacking me? It was living in the moment. It was hilarious, but yeah. So yeah, no, she doesn't know. No, didn't know that. Blah. She does not know anything about X-Wing. Let's keep looking at this dial. So we have the red 4 forward. Can't slam off of it, obviously, because it is red. You have an option here for a get out of jail free card ish. I mean, it's a 4 forward, one base length, obviously longer than the 3 forward. I doubt we're gonna see it unless. I mean, it gives you an option to possibly jump range, and it gives you a 5 dice cruise missile. If you want it, if you need it. So maybe you got long range scanners, somehow got a focus token from another ship, and you get that 4 forward, there is your cruise missile. And I understand why they didn't make it white, because slamming 4s. Yeah, I think it's a fair dial, but I think that's going to hurt it a little bit, is that it's fair. I think in order to be really competitive in our current meta, like, it, some things have to be really, really good, especially things with arcs. Like this ship, you have to use your arc in order to shoot anything. You know, there's no turret options whatsoever. You can't drop bombs. There's no AOE damage besides possibly, you know, doing a harpoon missile or saturation salvo. Is that what it's called? Yeah, saturation salvo. Yeah, we're going to have to, it's going to take some really good flying to get the, you know, get the most out of these guys. Here we go. I think this is probably what we're going to talk about next. Let's talk about Advanced Slam. So the Reddit FAQ. Was true, at least this part was, right? So for those of you who don't remember, the very last condition of Advanced Slam, where it says on your action bar, was not there before. Okay, now So that means that once this comes out slash when the errata happens, you can no longer with a K-Wing slam and drop bombs. That's over. It's done. But you can, well, yeah, I guess technically it's not done. You can, it's on your action bar. So yeah, if it's on your action bar only, the other thing you can't do, some people were saying, oh, you can still do it with experimental interface, but you can't because experimental interface is a card action, not on your action bar. So you can't do it there either. Doesn't work with experimental interface, does it? No? Because it doesn't say it adds an action to your... wait a second. Experimental interface says that you can do... Dang it. I got to read that. I don't play with that card. Ever. Experimental interface is a... What is that? There it is. Once per round, after you perform an action, you may perform one free action. Ah, okay. So... Got it. You would do the slam. You would do your action off your action bar. Experimental interface. There it goes. Got it. Sorry. Took me a second. Again, I have never played with that card. or you do your... I guess you wouldn't have advanced slam. But anyway. Advanced slam, yeah. I mean... Outside of, it's not going to be used the same. It's not going to be used the same. Yeah, you know, you can't advance slam and experimental interface because they're both modifications. I got excited there. So why even experimental interface then? Because you would slam. Slam is the first action, then experimental base. Okay, there you go. That's it. Sorry, I was thinking advanced slam in my head. I don't like the stress. I think we'll see it for sure. I guess the not bad part is that if we don't get the half points rule on small bases, that's just another point on Miranda, right? If you're going to go that route. Yeah, sorry for the confusion. It took me. I am really tired. We did a 3-hour concert right before this, so it took me a minute to work through that. But yeah, so. And yeah, I would not want to be stressed with that dial. Triple K, I see Diamond King just asked, Triple K Wing is dead though, for sure. Possibly. Yeah. Anthony Papaccio? Anthony Papaccio, that is exactly what this is. Jonathan Lee hooked me up. Thank you, sir. For anybody just joining us, give us a call. Let's talk about the gumbo. Give us your thoughts. Don't just do it in the chat. I mean, I can read your words, but let the world hear you. Let's talk about the gumbo. Let's talk about whatever you want to talk about. But yeah, Advanced Slam has been changed. We will see how that affects the meta. I mean, it's not bad to be able to slam, get an action. I think what will happen is we will start to see advanced slam more on the gunboat than we will on K-Wings. Because with the ability to shoot with a weapons disabled token, let's say you had long-range scanners, you had the missile title, you would get a target lock one turn, you could move, slam, get a focus... And now shoot. So yeah, that could possibly be really, really awesome. But that would be it. That would be the only reason. Sor Duber. I mean, what I said would probably be the only way you would want to use it. All right, let me take a look at that title again. And all this stuff is new, so I'm still, processing a lot of it. So yeah, if you had long range scanners, you could slam into a missile. Long range scanners, target lock, one turn, turn two, or turn subsequent turn, slam into position for a missile, advanced slam, have a focus. Is that better than guidance chips? Probably not. but yeah, that would kind of be the only way. Anyway. Now here, people in the chat, let's do a one or a two, okay? Let's take a look at both of our titles. I guess we didn't read the second one. The XG1 assault configuration. It says your upguard. Wow, I am tired. The upgrade bar gains two cannon icons, and you may perform attacks with cannon secondary weapons that cost two or fewer squad points, even while you have a weapons disabled token. So here's my problem with this one. So your options are tractor beam, jamming beam now, and flechette cannon. I think it's just those three. I know a lot of people were like, why not give us that additional point so that we can get ion cannon? I think that'd be too good. I think it'd be way too good. Have you ever had your ship ionized off the board? It feels really bad. Is it any worse than getting it bombed off the board? Probably not, but maybe they're learning from their mistakes. They're trying to give people more places to play. So I think that's why they capped it at two, mostly because of ion cannon. That would be an interesting question to ask the devs. One thing that will be interesting, I think, over time is tractor beam has a place. You would not want to put multiple tractor beams in your list with this, not in standard at least, because you're not doing any damage. You know, the follow-up ship may do damage, but I would argue that probably jamming beam is going to be the best one with this, being able to assign that jam token. And then I believe what that does is later on when they would get a focus evade or a target lock, it strips that at that moment. So that is that's that. Flechette cannon. Maybe the gunboat will create the flechette cannon, the meta, huh? Maybe. So now here's my question. So I think my opinion was pretty solid. Oops, sorry. Was pretty obvious there. I think the OS1 is gonna be here. Maybe I'll move to the middle. I think the OS1, the one on this side, is gonna be the better one. So let's take a look at some pilots. Advanced slam, forgot to hide you. All right, so we'll start on the bottom. We have the new squadron pilot starting in at 18 points. 18 points, nice and cheap ship. Of course, I mean, you are not going to run one of these at 18 points naked. You're not going to do it. Two attack dice is not enough in this meta. You need to hit really hard, and but what it does do, because it starts very low for 7 hit points. That's huge for 7 hit points. You can build this out to 23, 24, 25 and have a piece of a list. So we'll see how this gets used. I think competitively, this one has the most potential because it allows you to do more things with the other parts of your list. This can possibly fill a role. So then the PS4 is 21 points. So that is a 3-point jump for 2 PS. But you get the EPT slot, where this is where if you wanted to run something like Deadeye could come in. Now, I'm just kind of, again, I read this at work when I was on my lunch break, and we're basically talking about it now. I think that, I don't know if Deadeye is going to be the best on these guys. I'm really, the more I'm thinking about it, long range scanners sounds really good on the gunboat in general with the OS-1 title. So I don't know if we're going to see Deadeye. I'm probably going Crackshot to make sure that my missile hits hard. I think I'm going Crackshot. Or you know what? Would you do that? Because you have the slam and you can get some interesting positioning, maybe you take Trickshot instead and hit harder with your missiles. Oh, okay. We had somebody try to call in, and I guess it didn't go through. Let me call him back. I want to call Samuel back. Why does technology not work all the time? I don't want to say his phone number out loud. Let me call this man back. Sorry, guys. Technology. Oh, there it goes. Wait, that's not right. Dang it. Aha. There it is. Okay. So we're going to call Samuel back and see what he wants to chat about. See if he picks up. Oh, he got radio shy. Or he's mad. He's like, oh, he didn't pick up the phone. Forget it. Yeah, Samuel, sorry about that. Give me a call back, buddy. All right. We'll keep going. Again, lines are open, so feel free to give us a call. Talk about your stuff. So, 21 points, EPT. I'm thinking crack shot. I'm thinking... five dice harpoon missiles. Maybe that'll be good. Then we have the PS5. Lieutenant Karsabi. Is that right? I'll make that a little bit bigger because I have old man eyes and I cannot see anything here. I moved myself. Stay there, self. Yeah, Karsabi. So, ability reads, when you receive a weapons disabled token, if you are not stressed, you may receive one stress token to remove it. So, I think the obvious-ish combo with this is, again, OS-1. Let's say you have the OS-1 title. Excuse me. Let me rewind. What this lets you do, it lets you do what the OS-1 title lets you do, which is fire a missile after slamming, okay? Lets you fire a missile after slamming with taking a stress. But the problem I had with this pilot right away is the dial is not good with dealing with stress, okay? We'll pull that up here again. Let me pull it to the side here. There you go. I don't want this guy to be stressed at all. Two bank, two forward, can be blocked pretty easily. But what you could do is, you know, Deadeye could work on this pilot for sure. Slam, Deadeye. That could work. Then you don't even have to take the title if you don't want to. But would you still? Title's optional on this guy. I don't love it. I don't love it. That's stress. Stress without a good dial can be bad news, especially people have gotten really good at blocking. So, not sure. I'm just reading somebody's text here. Oh, gunboat hype. And then lastly, we have the PS7. Just take that dial out of here. PS7, it says, this is Major Vendor. We could see his text on the original preview, and it says, when defending, if you have a weapons disabled token, roll one additional defense dice. So being able to have a PS7 who can slam around, be more defensive, kind of basically get a lightweight frame effect-ish, right? Just plus one AGI, but this is going to trigger all the time. So effectively having a 2-3-4-3 stat line, and this guy screams, I want to flank you, right? Because he wants to be able to do the slam maneuvers. It does have some slower moves on the dial, so it can do a 1 and then a 1, 1 bank, 1, you know, and try not to move too fast in order to keep things in its arc. I think the move we'll see with this guy a lot is, you know, he'll come in, get his missiles off, and, you know, something like a 2 bank, 2 hard, and just trying to keep things in arc. Because the problem with having to slam is even a 1 forward, right? So you got your base, you have the 1 plus the base again, and then you slam again. Like, that's 5, that's 5 ship bases total that you just moved off of a 1-1 slam. So how do you stop this guy? Well, you keep, like, at least his ability, you keep him close into combat. You don't give him the lanes to be slamming around, slamming jamming. And also it's going to depend on how many points you put into him. I think if you keep him relatively cheaper, try to keep him below 32 points. I have, you know, this is just a quick mental build here. You know, OS1 title. So that gives him the 27. Add a harpoon missile, that gives him the 31. Plus what? Plus long range scanners. Maybe plus advanced slam. This is an argument for advanced slam on him. Because if you can slam, I would take VI on this guy. Get him to 9. Okay, so here we go. So PS9, that's 1 point for VI. 4 points for a harpoon missile. 1 point for the title. And then plus, what did I just say? Not long range scanners. We can take advanced slam. That way you can slam, get the target lock, so that you can meet the condition of the OS1 title and be able to get the missiles off. That could be cool. But then we're always going back to Nim. Nim is PS10 and can say, no, you can't shoot me because you have an arc. Yeah. So those are our pilots. Let's take a look at some of the other cards here. We talked a little bit about the XG1 assault configuration. We had, you know, you get 2 cannons and you get to perform 2 point or lower cannon shots if you have a weapon disabled. I don't think it's going to be great. What will change that possibly in the future is it depends on what other cannons we get. If we get other 1 and 2 point cannons that maybe start doing damage plus control effects, or even if they did light damage instead of any control at all, I think this automatically becomes more viable. So just something to chew on there. Another card that's linked specifically, basically you're going to run this if you're going to do it on a gunboat, you have to use the XG1 title, and it's linked batteries. It is a cannon slot, 2 points, and it says, when attacking with a primary weapon or a cannon secondary weapon, you may reroll one attack die. So you get a predator effect for 2 points if you have an open cannon slot. These ships probably, one thing I'm seeing a lot of, and I did think of it right away as well, is robots. All right, there's a spot there that you can possibly fill, because you don't, how often do you use the second cannon in competitive play? You usually don't. The problem is paying 2 points for it. I don't know if it's worth it. But at the same time, on a B-wing, that has maybe some viability. Oh, there it is. Just popped up in the chat. Yeah. B-wings. There's some possibility there. You get a soft predator effect. The problem is that there's still B-wings. I wish they would, you know, I think automatically if they would just change the dial on the B-wing, it would be significantly better. It can't K-turn over a large base. That's just sad. It's like, we don't have the momentum, sir. We can't get there. But yeah, so it has an option for B-wings. I think the cards in this pack, you know, I don't know what in this pack is going to come out and be meta-defining. And just my initial feel is that I don't think anything in here is going to be, it's going to break the meta. I really don't. Jamming beam seems decent. It's cheap. It's 1 point. You can't go wrong with one. Oh, I mean, you can go wrong with 1 point. But then the problem is that it's only range 1 to 2. So that could be cool. Linked batteries, of course, can be used on non-gunboat ships. But the gunboat itself, are we going to see it, you know, top tables at Worlds? Maybe. It depends on how you kit them out, and we'll see how good they are, because they have to stay in arc. No turrets. No out-of-arc shots at all. It's just this. The most other damage you can do is with something with kind of splash damage. So we'll see. I'm not convinced, though. I'll be honest. I think it really needed to have something a little bit more aggressive in order to really make a splash. Now, here is a question, right? Let's say we look at all these ships are coming up, right? We have this one, the gunboat. We have the Phantom II. We have the Kimogila, the Rebel Resistance Bomber, and the Silencer. If power curve wise, they are lower than where we are now, and we get a fact that really changes things, does it show that maybe FFG has started to realize, oh, hey, we really power creeped into some issues. We need to settle things down. I don't know. But it is a question I'm asking, because this ship seems too fair. Yeah, you have to shoot things in its arc. In order to get to PS9, you have to use VI and use the EPT slot off of your highest pilot. So you don't have anything like, you can't put expertise on it or anything. So it'll be interesting. Another thought is, looking at the options of the PS7, so let's hide linked batteries here, of being a points fortress. Let's assume that FFG says, no, we're not going to do small base half points. How many points can we get major vendor up to? Just for funsies here. Let's see. Let's pull up the squad builder. Thank you, yet another squad builder, for already having the assault gunboat ready to go in my squad builder here. So, because one strategy with Miranda, right, is just to have her just be stupid expensive and make sure you survive. So let's say what we take one of the titles. We're going to take the good one, the arsenal loadout with the missiles. What else can we do here? Let's take some missiles. Let's take some harpoon missiles. We're going to be at PS7, huh? So we should probably take long range scanners. And then we get to this spot, right, where you have two open torpedo slots and an extra missile slot. You have reload. You don't need extra munitions. So if you want to make this guy a point fortress, you just need to start taking different types of ordnance, right? You can take, ion torpedoes, sure. Advanced proton torpedoes, sure. So you could get it up to around 52 points by trying really hard and putting things that don't make sense on it. So I think the prognosis there is that you don't want to try to use this as a point fortress. So very interesting. It's 58 to the max. There you go. I didn't max it out. Actually, I was like, oh, let me try not to be dumb, and then didn't click them all. So 58 points. Don't do that. That just sounds bad. Sounds really bad. because I put a 0 point upgrade there. There you go. 58 points is the max. Yeah. Not going to be a good point fortress. Stay in the 30s. Probably 31. Yep, there you go. Engine upgrade. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll see Major Vendor kit it out that well. Because the other issue, right, at least comparing to Miranda, Miranda can regen. No regen here. Empire doesn't get regen. So while they compared the dials between these two ships, I think to match the power level of the game, again, I think the dial on this ship should have been better. I think, would it have broken it to have a K-turn? Probably. Probably. But I think it would have been really interesting and given these ships a chance versus things that have turrets. Now, again, if FFG is planning on doing something to turrets, bringing the power level down, then sure. Things get better. And I'm of the opinion, just like most people, that the more things we have that are using arcs, the better. Oh, Dion. I see somebody yelling, Dion, small ship only. All right, so no IGs. Never mind. It's getting late here. So, thank you to my two callers who called in, the brave souls. Anybody else who wants to call in? Great. We're going to wrap up our show. We've looked at all the cards here. If there's any comments you want to put in the chat, that's great. The last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to listen to some listener voicemails. We do have some of those. Samuel did leave us a voicemail. Actually, I'm not going to play that because he said his phone number in that one. We have a couple other ones that we have just waiting on the line, so let's take a listen.
Hey, Dion. Sandy Stockwell here. As you know, I really like flying bad ships, but I want to actually win a game sometime. If I want to fly the U-Wing, do you know any of any lists that can fly U-Wing? Thanks. Later.
Oh, that's my friend Andy Stockwell. He's one of our Gold Squadron pilots. the U-Wing. All right, you know what? Twitch chat / YouTube chat. Help me build a good U-Wing. The problem is that I don't know that there is a good U-Wing build for what it does. It being a large base ship that can give up half points pretty easily. I think the best... Oh, man, bring a 100-point bid. I think the best list that I've seen with a U-Wing, and it be effective, was a dash. Now, the dash did most of the work with two naked Blue Squadron novices just taking up space and blocking, similar to a Jumpmaster. Obviously, they don't have the barrel roll and all that stuff, but a decent enough dial to be able to just take up space and, when able... take advantage of those forward arcs. I think I've said this before, and others. I really think it would have been so cool if the U-Wing would have had side arcs. Will they ever change that? I don't know. I know that they're movie ships, and they didn't know anything, and they're just like, hey, this is what it looks like. Figure it out.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
Last Friday, so this would have been October... let's see... 13th.
Friday the 13th?
Yeah, there you go. Friday the 13th. I'm bad at dates. Friday the 13th. Somebody posted on the FFG forums this Happy Friday post, and it said, if you could ask Gold Squad any question, what would it be? And I was really surprised. Somebody linked it to me. I was like, oh, cool. So I started like typing, you know, answers to people, and I was like, wait a second. This would be a great opportunity to, you know, just... talk about it on the podcast. So let's start at the top. Okay. So the first question, because this was on the same day that we had the drive-thru was open at Pastimes. So somebody asked, how's the store doing?
Yeah. Okay, well, the store's doing fine. This happened at 11 a.m. Two people who were, I believe, over 70 years old got into an accident. The driver of the person that crashed through the store had the accelerator and brakes in the handles of, I guess, the steering wheel. And so they just grabbed onto that wheel, didn't let go, and drove right through the store because they panicked.
Oh, man.
So that's what happened. Luckily, it was closed, so no one was injured other than the driver that drove through and the other driver
that it hit.
The lounge was possibly injured. Yeah. Sad face.
Not that sad. I kind of want that to go away.
Everyone loves the Pastimes Lounge.
Yeah, nobody sits in it. So.
Yeah. But... remarkably, not much was destroyed within the store. The van just kind of like displaced everything everywhere, except for like, you know, the brick wall and the plate glass that it drove through. But
just some small things.
Yeah. Pastimes, though, remarkably, they got a cleanup crew in there, and they were open by 5 o'clock that day.
It's insane.
Yeah,
they were open for like, right, but they had like LCG that night, yeah, and we had, Magic
we
tournament.
Had, yeah, we had our L5R and Game of Thrones open play. We had plenty of players and everything was good. And as far as I know, FNM went off without a hitch. I did suggest on that original post when I posted that, like, it got really funny. Everyone started making jokes. And I think the employees at the store were kind of enjoying all the jokes that everyone made on the internet. So I was like, oh, man, it's so funny. And, like, I posted a picture of Captain Oiken, you know, joking about this van being like Oiken. And then DL made a mock-up of it and posted it. And apparently, like, we're printing those now to give away, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that's going to be – I decided that's going to be our next tournament card that we, like, hand out to people is going to be Captain Eugen.
Yeah, so
– why not?
Everyone's good at pastimes. Thank you to everyone that worked there and got everything up and running. Pretty incredible. Pastimes is a good team. I will give them that. I want to give out a shout out to Brandon, though, for the funniest comment on the van. At Pastimes, we have rewards points that you can, like, redeem for, like, store credit or, like, template holders or all kinds of things in the store. And Brandon asked how many rewards points you had to redeem to get in-store parking.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So kudos to Brandon because that was hilarious. That was definitely the best joke.
That was great. And you know, it's interesting that we have more of the story now because the initial reports was like the driver was mad, so he went through the glass. I was like, wait, what?
No.
I like that story. I mean, it's way more funny than knowing that he had handheld controls.
Yeah.
But
he was a 73-year-old man, and he got into an accident with another 73-year-old man, and he panicked, and he just didn't let go of the accelerator and swerved into the store. It's amazing. Ugh. He didn't hit the pillars. He drove through, like, one section. And he missed, like, most of the planograms in the store with the displays. So, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing, but there are tire tracks on the floor still. So that's interesting.
Alan was talking about getting those floors rebuffed. Maybe now he needs to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was an interesting day. So that's all I got to say about that.
We have a more serious question here. So it says, what would it take for all three factions to be competitive going forward? So I'll take this one. So we are living in a rebel meta right now. And Scum is also very strong. Mostly, you know, we have lots of great turrets. Nim is a huge force. And really the only competitive thing that the Imperials have right now is Kylo Ren crew. So... now, this is not a popular answer, but right now I would say that, you know, Imperials, you know, their faction identity is very much, you know, like, oh, we're arc dodgers and high pilot skill with low hit points or the TIE Swarm. So problem with TIE Swarm right now is bombs destroy TIE Swarms. And on top of that, now we're getting harpoon missiles here in a few weeks. So... TIE Swarms are dead, right? They're pretty much nil.
They've been dead since wave like 8.
Yeah, they've been exactly. Yeah,
but I mean, arc dodgers, especially now, like that. The arc dodgers persisted for a while, but those guys cannot deal with all these bombs.
Yeah, and then so here is how you can make Imperials competitive: is you have to give them things similar or the same as Rebels and Scum. The problem with that is you do lose the faction identity.
I mean,
or you have to majorly power creep the Imperials in order to make them work. Like a natural PS, you know, PS10 with an EPT that's really cheap that can move after Nim with advanced sensors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I would argue that we are already moving towards faction identity not really even being a thing in the game, personally.
I mean, we already have Imperial TLTs, so...
Yeah, I mean, you have Imperial TLTs, you have Scum, you have the Cade Bane, who's kind of like the Scum, Sabine, and, you know, every list has turrets, every list has, you know, things now that can share abilities. Like, when the game came out, Imperials were all about, we don't work together, but we will swarm you or we will arc dodge you. Rebels were all like, we work together. And Scum were supposed to be like, we got tricks. But like now Scum can do everything that the Rebels can do with the exception of like really working together. That's kind of the only thing that Rebels really get that no one else gets.
Yeah, so no perfect answer, but that's kind of how we look at it.
I have a different answer, in my opinion. But it's probably way less popular than yours, though.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
In my opinion, the only way to get more ships, I would like to not just see like all three factions. I'd like to see more ships play. I think you need to look at – there are two situations. Look at the ships that are extremely dominant, and I think you need to limit certain combos of the game that allow you to just do so many things with one particular ship.
So you're saying like an FAQ that we don't have yet?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Something like that. Something like that. I mean, I don't know. It's just like there's no incentive to play ships that move and take an action anymore, which is what really hurts Imperials because most of their ships kind of just do that. That's like what they do. They move and take an action. So there's not really an incentive to play like a TIE fighter or, you know, any of those filler ships. Because why would you play that when you can play like Nim or a Jumpmaster or Miranda who could move and then do so many things? Plus they're resilient. So I think what you have to do is look at taking away some of the action stacking and resiliency on some of these high-end ships. And if you did that, I think you would have more of a natural rise of good stuff rising to the top and more ships seeing play. I have some ideas about it, but some of mine are a little drastic. Like, I would take a ton of the upgrade cards and rotate them out of a format. I'd create a format based around upgrades. I wouldn't necessarily rotate out ships, but I would rotate a lot of upgrade cards out and remove some of the combos that are widely used in all the major events, but that's just a personal opinion.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, actually, Ron did work on was a game designer. I mean, was, yeah. So like for his job for a long time. So he guy knows what he's talking about. He's got some good ideas.
Yeah, and I even had ideas too that were bad, and a lot of my thoughts now too come from, you know, mistakes made in the past. So
yep.
You learn from them and you move on, but you seem to see some mistakes, you know, only because hey, I did that, I screwed that up. You know, power creep's natural in every game. Like, I don't want people to think that I'm just like, oh, X-Wing's like super power creeped. It took a long time for them to kind of start to get on that little power creep train, and it's just natural because you don't have a rotation and you have to put out new stuff. And as you design stuff, what happens is the space that you're allotted to design starts to shrink as more and more things come out, because you can only stat a ship so many ways, you can only put so many maneuvers on a dial. But then it's like, okay, I still need to make new stuff. How do I make something new and different, but then also make sure that it's not kind of just replacing old stuff, which is hard. Somebody asked us why we chose gold and not blue.
Yep, that was my next one. Why gold and not blue?
Yeah, that was
that's an easy
one. Yeah, that was Fuzzy Wookie. That's really an easy one. I mean, anyone can answer that.
Anyone from Pastimes.
Yeah.
So Pastimes, their colors for their logo are effectively gold or yellow, if you will, and black. So we just kind of started using the Pastimes logo with all of our stuff, and that Gold Squadron just morphed out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, originally Pastimes was super awesome, and I'm not like they're not now, but they
edit that out. Okay, 47.
No, what?
Try again.
No, originally when I was looking for a place to play, Pastimes was super amazing. They were our host, and their shirts, everything was black and gold. So, you know, Star Wars X-Wing, we had Gold Squadron Y-Wings, and Gold Squadron was always a thing, even going back in other games. And I was like, you know what? This is perfect. We'll name ourselves Gold Squadron. We can use the black and gold color scheme for Pastimes. And, it'd just be a way to kind of like brand us and get us out there. So blue was not in the color scheme, neither was red or any of the others, so that's why we chose gold.
Yep. All right, this is from the Human Hydra. He asks, do you like curved barrel rolls as much as I like curved barrel rolls? See, I think the problem, Human Hydra, is that you didn't tell us how much you liked it, so we have no way to gauge. So sorry, we can't really answer your question.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Yeah, positive or negative.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a cool design concept. It obviously really opens up your maneuverability with those ships. So I think it's really cool. Obviously, it was originally super busted on Echo when they first kind of started that trend. But I just think it's another. It was a creative way to create a new type of effectively maneuver that really opened up the design space that allowed people to fly a lot better, which is something I miss in this game, is the skill of flying, but that's another topic.
I mean, I agree. I think it's just an elegant solution to add something new to the game that it doesn't inherently feel like it's super like OP or anything to me. Like, the thing with Echo was, you know, being able to curve any which way you want after your opponent moves.
Yeah.
You're still going to be limited to the pilot skill on the ship, and it's only one speed as opposed to two, which is a big deal. I still think it's awesome. I love it. I'm not going to lie, like, Star Vipers got me super excited to play, even if they're not competitive. I'll get them on the table just so I can play with this mechanic.
Mm-hmm. So, next one. This is from Hans Solo. Yes. Why do you not have an EPT slot, and do you think that is okay or unfair?
As in, why does Gold Squad not have an EPT slot?
Yeah, so no Y-Wings have EPTs. Yeah.
I mean, the named ones should. EPT. Yeah, the named ones should. I mean, the reality is those ships came out so early in the game that if they were designed now, they would 100% have an EPT slot and probably something else. But because they came out so early in this game, EPT slots, I guess they just didn't think it was appropriate for whatever reason. But
well, that's interesting because, you know, I talked to Jason, not Jason, I'm sorry, Jay, the original designer of the game, way back in the day about this exact question. And one of the things that he mentioned was that when they were putting, like, the upgrades, like, choosing what upgrade slots go on each ship, they didn't really give them a lot of upgrades because they felt like there was so much, like, and you saw this in what people played, there wasn't a large pool of upgrade cards, and most people thought putting upgrades on ships was a waste of points, like, even EPTs. Like, everyone was all about trimming upgrade guard points to fit as many ships in their list as possible. So even if they had an EPT back then, other than, like, maybe VI, I'm not even sure what EPT the Y-Wings would have used. But
yeah, well, there wasn't really as many back then either.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely should have had it without a doubt. And, you know, we're seeing the reason why. I mean, Y-Wings would have no place in this game at all if it wasn't for TLT at all. So you're seeing now, like, you know, all the old ships that just – the big difference between the old ships and the new ships is the new ships have a lot more upgrade slots with no real cost investment in them, whereas the old ships had a lot less and they cost a lot more. So that's why they don't really see play.
Alrighty, next one. Do you want to buy any death sticks? No?
As in cigarettes?
I don't know. Death sticks. Come on. Death sticks.
I don't know what that means.
Like, it's a drug in Star Wars, but I actually don't know exactly what it is. Other than it's like something you don't want.
I think you want to go home and rethink your life.
Yeah, no, facts.
Yeah, we'll all pass. Thank you very much, Mr. Smut Peddler.
Yeah, I'm a lot to handle sober, so I don't think we want me on drugs.
I like Nixon's question. Why did they let the Skurg happen?
Yep, that's our next one.
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question or what?
All right. So we got to keep this one short because we can go on there for a long time. I think it has to do partly of what Ron said already, where it's like, oh, hey, let's make sure we need something new. What are some new stats? What are some new combinations of upgrades we can put together? And a big thing that actually Scum and Villainy just released an episode where they actually were able to get all three developers on a phone call and interview them all together. And one thing that it's very true is that when they're designing the game, they're designing it really far ahead in the future. And most likely, like the players that are playtesters don't know what the meta and what is good. Like they're playing with their current meta minds with ships that are going to be out in 1 to 2 years. So I highly doubt that when the Skurg was tested that people were thinking, oh, hey, VI advanced sensors is the way to go. Oh, genius. You know that the astromech you never use? Genius is the way to go. You know, like nobody was thinking about those things. It comes out and you get the mass of X-Wing people going like, oh, you know, like, oh, hey, this is a busted combo. And we figured it out once we saw it spoiled, but it took so many more people being exposed to it in order to find that combo. Why did they let it happen? I mean, we'll never know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like you're saying, the amount of people testing this game is probably, I mean, I don't know. But it's got to be minutely small in comparison to other games, you know? I feel like the design philosophy is to err on the side of, like, putting out something new and dealing with it once it comes out than to necessarily, you know, make it underpowered. Because they want, you know, in the end, they want to sell ships, right? So if it's a little overpowered, they might feel like, well, as long as it's not going to break the game, we'll put it out. But I don't think they really know until it comes out, and then it's like, oh, okay, we got to do something about it.
Yep. FTS Gecko asks, when will you be creating a Gold Squadron is the best X-Wing podcast topic? So that's in reference to the Carolina Crates post.
We don't want to replicate the crates. The crates, if you start replicating the crates, then the universe is going to implode.
My question is, why did FTS Gecko just create the topic on his own?
Boom. That's where I was going to go with this.
I mean, what's going on? You're letting me down.
There you go. So you get on that, FTS Gecko. Chris Brown, we're not going to answer your question, you fool. I love you, but no. Wait, okay.
Which one's Chris Brown?
Killer Aardvark?
Killer Aardvark.
Oh, I don't know their names. What is his question?
You have to know that's Chris. That's Chico's thing, is Killer Aardvark. That's why Pyrodex has a picture of an aardvark for its icon.
It's a troll question.
Oh, okay.
Of course. Yeah. So you can look at it.
I'll look at it in the future.
Watch it later.
Yeah. Yeah. So Catch a Ninja.
I think that's supposed to be what it's supposed to be, but
bad at spelling. It says, I would ask, of all the crates who have tabled you, which one was your favorite? So
wait a minute, Catch a Ninja. No crate has ever tabled me.
Hang on a second, I have not been tabled by a crate.
Me either. This never happened.
Okay, but now let me set the record straight. Okay, I have been tabled by one crate, thank you, and his name is Zach Matthews, and it happened, you know, just a couple weeks ago. Not a big deal, we're gonna leave it alone. Okay. Whatever. So what? Yeah
I've never been tabled by a crate, just saying.
There you go. So this is Lobokai says, trying so hard not to laugh at minivan pulling an Oiken. It's not funny, except it is. My question, if if only three list archetypes were viable, what three would provide the most balance to the game? Oh man, so he's asking like pillars of X-Wing questions. Like, I guess it would be, you would probably, I don't know, go back to like the classics, right? You have like jousters and turrets and arc dodgers, right? Like that's probably.
I mean, I think you would go back to like the original first few waves of this game. When it was like kind of more in its purest state, where flying actually was way more important. I would
still say that it's important.
It's important,
like it's,
but it's not as important as it used to be. I feel like, yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I'm trying to think if there's any other. Because as soon as you started bringing in some of those other archetypes is when power creep really started happening.
So I would say that the first power creep was the invention of the turret. So if I could choose three archetypes that would bring the most balance to the game, I would choose the arc dodging ships, the jousting ships, and instead of a turret, I would choose the mobile firing arc ship.
I was just thinking that.
Ah, there you go.
So that's what I would say. So I would say you have your arc dodgers, your jousters, and your mobile fire arc. No actual turrets. Except for maybe I would change to Falcon. Instead of the Falcon being a true mobile, maybe the Falcon's like a 180, 180, and you would activate one side. Because really, the turrets on the Falcon actually operate that way, as two 180s that cover 360.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
You know what, FFG? That's my question. Is what have you done with the plans? We don't have... Where are my regional dates? Where are my system open dates? We have literally like 3 weeks until PAX Unplugged and the Mandalore Open is happening. And you actually haven't officially announced it yet. So, like, I would have gone if they would have announced it a couple months ago. But instead, my wife... like we agree, like, you know, she scheduled something for that weekend and now I'm wrecked. So thanks, FFG. Just want to put that out there.
Do we know like what the Mandalore Open even is, or is that just a name that was leaked? I know there's an event at PAX for sure.
Oh yeah, they on the PAX Unplugged site, they have the format. So basically what happens is You start, you're randomly paired, okay? And everybody that is 2-1 goes into an upper tier, okay?
Oh, okay. I did see this.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
And,
yeah.
And then
so after, it is called, I just didn't realize it was called Mandalore Open.
Mm-hmm, no, that's the Mandalore Open. And then after that, everybody who goes undefeated from the 2-1s is getting an invitation to the Coruscant Open, which we have no idea what that is. I'm guessing it's going to be some type of invitational that happens at the FFG Center. Great show. You know, a little bit shorter than the last couple ones, but well, we were a little bit short-staffed today. We did talk about a lot of things. We packed it in with those listener questions and talking about pace of play. But I had fun. It was good times.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think? I wanted to ask you a question. Should we do the Halloween event again?
The
Raccoons.
All right, so man, we can't talk about that online. I mean, let's do something for sure on November. What would it be? November.
It would be November 5th, I think.
November 5th. So we can do that, or that thing that I was telling you about that I can't publicly say.
That thing. Yeah.
That thing. Because
we'll talk about as soon as we start recording, because Andrew doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do something, but I want to do something, and then after that we'll go back to some standard 100 for a little while.
Yep, because we got, obviously now we got to get ready for regionals and system opens.
Right.
It's time Time to put in the work. So, just a reminder to everybody, you can watch live X-Wing events and content at our Twitch channel. We're also streaming from YouTube. You can watch video replays of our streams and our Intergalactic Theater 5000 on our YouTube channel. Just search up Gold Squadron Podcast. And lastly, if you enjoyed the show and you want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag like this quick draw Captain Nim and Lorik and templates and all this, I'm literally buried in swag right now that I'm getting ready to shipped out. You can go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. We got stuff for everybody at different price levels. This is Dion Morales for Marcel. No, not for Marcel because he didn't come. I'm not even going to edit that out. Marcel, you scrub. You should have been here. For Andrea and Ron, this is Dion Morales. Gold Squadron out.